7 years ago today, 28-year-old Gordon Jones was one of 11 workers killed aboard the Deepwater Horizon oil rig that exploded on April 20th, 2010. And we have as our guest his father, Keith, who has been critical of what happened, as many others were. And since then, there have been many developments, including a movie that we will talk about. But 7 years ago, it was quite a day for you and his family. His wife, by the way, at the time was, for all intents, 9 months pregnant. And how did you first find out that your son was in peril and might be a victim of this?
I got a call from Michelle. I was at the office working on a brief, and Michelle called, and actually when I walked in the office that morning, my secretary said, "There's a fire on a rig off of Fushan." And I said, "There's hundreds of rigs off of Fushan," which is true. But we didn't know what rig it was then, and she didn't, but Michelle called me and told me that the fire was on the Deepwater Horizon, and that Gordon was unaccounted for. But they told her that we've got a boat coming in with 100 employees or so, and he could be there, could have otherwise escaped. But it was pretty clear to us once that the vessel, the Damon Bankston, arrived and Gordon wasn't on it, we knew there. If he had been in a lifeboat, he would have been in contact with somebody by now. They're pretty sophisticated lifeboats on those rigs.
Based on what you've been able to find out, did he know what hit him, or was he a victim immediately?
The compression of an explosion like that causes anyone there to lose consciousness immediately. I struggle with the minutes before then, but knowing that the well was blowing out, mm-hmm. they couldn't help but know that. But as far as the explosion and fire, once the explosion happened, Gordon and the others were gone.
And he was, by all accounts, not just yours as his father, an exceptional young man.
Yeah, he was. Everybody liked Gordon. And so everybody who knows him misses him.
And 3 weeks after he died, his wife gives birth to a son.
Max. There was some pressure to name him Gordon Jr. At that point, but she and Gordon had agreed on Max, and that's what he was going to be. So, Max now is almost 7 and looks just like his dad, big like his father, face looks like his dad. He's spitting image.
And you have been a big proponent of his widow and her fate in life with your grandson, and I understand she has remarried.
She has. She married a man named David, who we like very much. They live in the same subdivision as us, as does Gordon's sister, Katie, in the university club. I pass by their house a few times every single day. They have a good life. David is standing in as a good father for them.
Based on the incredible incompetence of BP and their reaction that came after, that was not so pleasant either, is it difficult for you not to be bitter about what has happened?
Oh, I think that a certain part of me will always be bitter. It wasn't really just incompetence. It was greed. Professor Robert B., who headed up the commission to investigate the Deepwater Horizon, concluded that BP made 26 consecutive decisions, consecutive, each one of which saved BP money, and each one of which made a blowout a little more likely.
And now they're going on as though nothing happened. They're still a very profitable company. It paid off a lot of damages, including to the state of Louisiana. But nonetheless, BP rolls along. Your son does not.
Right. Well, BP was, you know, the saying too big to fail. That maybe the second largest corporation in the world, they, I can't imagine the kind of damage, environmental and loss of life, that they would have to cause to really be broke and not be able to make it right back.
Mm-hmm. Well, you went to Capitol Hill and scored a lot of points, but lost the ultimate battle. How was that experience?
Well, it was very educational. I learned an awful lot about how Congress works, how it doesn't work. How it doesn't work is what we used to see on the cartoon on Saturday mornings, how a bill becomes a law. It's not like that. The procedure is far more involved, and it's far less direct. And in the end, although we passed in record time through the House, in the end, party politics stood in the way of passage of a bill that would have amended the Death on the High Seas Act. Hmm.
The movie has been just hailed as one of the great masterpieces of film. Did you like it?
Well, I did. We all knew that there was going to be a movie made. It's pretty impossible to imagine. There have been at least three documentaries that I know of, but there was going to be a feature film, and we're just grateful that the people who ended up with the rights are the people who made the movie were who they are. Pete Berg was the director, and top to bottom, Lionsgate was very, very considerate of us throughout.
How much did you have as far as discussions with the filmmakers?
Well, they came to Baton Rouge and met with us before they started shooting, and found out it was Pete Berg and one of the screenwriters, and they found out whatever we could tell them about Gordon. And and if you watch the movie, Gordon's big scene is when he gives a fossil to Mark Wahlberg, playing Mike Williams, and after that scene is over, in sort of a little transition scene, they take a shot of the rig from some distance, and you see various guys on the rig doing things, and right in the middle is a guy in a red jumpsuit practicing his golf swing. And we had told Pete Berg that Gordon was a very good golfer. He was very dedicated to the sport. And so when we saw the previews a few weeks before it was released mm-hmm. in the theaters, Pete Berg was there. And that's what he asked me as soon as he saw me. He said, "Did you see the golf swing?" And what it was really is a gift to us, and it was very considerate of him to think about that when he's shooting the movie, and then to include it in the final cut because it didn't advance the plot or the characters. It just
tribute to your son.
Yeah,
he was a mud engineer. He would have been 35. You're a prominent lawyer. He went a different direction in life, but it sounds as though you were quite proud of that direction that he had taken.
Well, I got him the job. I have a fraternity brother who worked for M.I. Swaco, the company that Gordon went to work for, and he was in sales, and from everything he told me, I thought Gordon would be perfect selling mud, entertaining oil field guys and golf tournaments and telling jokes, which are the two things Gordon did best. But before he could become a salesman, he had to serve as a mud engineer. So he went to mud school in Houston and was doing his time and had really to have been on the deep water at that stage of his career was pretty remarkable. The deeper you go, the more difficult it is, mm-hmm. for obvious reasons, and the higher standards they set for the men that come work there.
And he was about to come home.
A couple of days. And he and Michelle were so looking forward to it. Because he was going to take a vacation, so that means he would have his 2 weeks off, then he would take vacation 2 weeks, and then he'd have his regular 2 weeks off. So he had 6 weeks ahead of him, where he was going to be there for Michelle to have Max, and he and I were going to play golf. And
Max was born on what day? Do you recall? It was in May, wasn't it?
Early
May.
Yeah.
3 weeks after the tragedy. And 7 years later, it sounds as though it's still pretty raw for you.
Sure it is. I can't imagine the day it won't be. I surround myself with mementos of Gordon. His picture's on two of my credit cards. I am constantly reminded of him, and I have nothing but pleasant memories of time with Gordon.
Did he grow up here?
Yep, in Baton Rouge, born and bred.
Went to school where?
St. Aloysius, and then Catholic High.
And at 28, whole life ahead. It's not supposed to be this way. You're not supposed to bury your son. But when you found out that it was definitively him and 10 others who had died, I said, and he's 3 weeks away from being a father, I'm sure it was just incredibly, it was incredibly tough to handle.
It was. Michelle was so strong. If you ask her, she'd say she had no choice. Max was going to be born, whether she was going to be strong about it or not. But and one thing when I've never lost a child in any way other than one that is known by everyone. When someone is lost under those circumstances, you don't come up short when it comes to people helping out. Everybody seems willing to do whatever they can. That people, I found the human race to be awfully gracious, generous.
There's a question we'll finish with from a listener, and it's a good one about whether this could be, it could happen again. Do you think so?
Sure. Unfortunately, I'm afraid it can, and here's why. Because there were lots of protections against a blowout on the Deepwater Horizon. It's not a valve that broke or something. They have many redundant layers of protection to make sure a blowout can't happen, because that's the worst thing that can happen on an oil rig. And greed caused them to make all these decisions that one by one stripped all those protections away. And as long as guys that make these decisions at their computers in Houston get year-end bonuses, there'll be motivation to make these bad decisions.
Randall in Lafayette's been waiting for a while, and we're going to slide you in. Randall, please be brief. You're on with Keith Jones. Hi, Randall.
Sure. Thank you for sharing, Mr. Keith. As somebody that was out offshore during that, I was curious if you are familiar with 2 years before the mast, a story and movie that moved the ball forward in terms of offshore and mariners' rights when you talked about the death at sea. Anyway, that's all. Thanks.
I wasn't familiar with it, but I will seek it out so I can see.
Well, Keith Jones, thank you for joining us. And we've visited on the air, I think, 3 or 4 times, and each time it's just as riveting and vivid as though it were April 20th, 2010. But you're a brave man, and thanks for keeping the memory of your son alive.
You're very kind. Thank you very much.